All right, 8:42 here on the Mighty 690. And we are here with John Vest from the Coffeyville Amateur Radio Club. And it is super exciting once again to have you on the program. And we have a few things to talk about with the Amateur Radio Club. And as we go into a meeting coming up next week, but always something going on in the world of ham radio. So how are you doing today, John?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing well. Good to have you here. So I don't know, have you... I actually just got my antenna back up at the RV park last night, and it was pretty fun. I talked to a guy in... just outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota, excuse me, and it was on 50 watts, and it was just a nice little QSO. He came in just fine, so it's always, I think, so much fun to be able to see who you can talk to and how far you can get and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, it is a very much a joy to be able to talk to other states and other countries. It was about a month ago. I actually talked with a Canadian station that was up at the north end of Canada, and it kind of shocked me because I was on a dipole antenna, which is just a piece of wire strung across my backyard, and I got a hold of them on that. So
that's great. Yeah, I mean, mine was just, it's a no-frills vertical that's on a fiberglass pole. I can just raise and lower as I need to, and but I'm amazed, you know, usually when I throw my call out there, they come back to me. So it is really cool. But, you know, we got a lot of new listeners and folks who maybe aren't familiar with amateur radio. So as we kind of did last month, do you want to give people just a brief overview of what ham radio is? And, you know, it's basically the world's largest licensed hobby, which is kind of interesting.
It's not only that, but it is probably one of the oldest hobbies as far as anything to do with communications. They were using ham radios back in 1918 up to 1926, and the size of the radios back then would fill the basement of a house,
right.
and that's what they actually did with them. They were in the basements of their houses,
and about anything you touch on them will kill you on those old
yes.
ones.
They would put out lots of power even if it hadn't been on for a while. And but with them using them back then, it was, a lot of it was done for communications between areas, remote areas that didn't have, of course, there was no phones in a lot of these areas, and they were remote areas in Canada and places like that, actually, that needed that type of communications to be able to talk to doctors and different things like that. There are a lot of old TV movies and all that have ham radios in them that is very interesting about them.
Oh, yeah. I know there's all sorts of people who they watch those old movies and they're always trying to spot and identify these radios and everything. So it is neat. But the other thing, and people with cell phones and everything, we get lulled into the sense that we'll always have communication available. And the fact of the matter is, there is plenty of the country that does not and will not ever have cell service, especially once you get off the beaten track path into the wilderness. I mean, we see those commercials on TV with the cell coverage map and the whole thing is pink or red or blue or whatever. And, oh, it looks like the whole state is covered. But, hey, if you actually zoom into those maps, there's plenty of parts of Kansas that don't have cell service. I mean, I know just around the Beaumont area, we've got some friends who have a ranch out there. And you have to drive to the road to get cell service. So it's another reminder, especially as people, you know, hunting season's off and running, you're not always going to have cell service. Whereas with ham radio, it gives you another tool to be able to communicate in a time of emergency.
Yeah. Also, there are, as you said, a lot of places that don't have it. If you go down here into Oklahoma, you go down into the Kiamichi Mountains and over into the Ozarks and Missouri and Arkansas, there's a lot of areas that do not have cell phone towers. There are a lot of areas that have to use communications like ham radio to be able to get out to people. I do know a place over in by Branson that they have. There's a guy there that lives there that used to live here in Coffeyville, and he is a ham radio operator, and he does all of emergency traffic to the Sheriff's Department, Taney County Sheriff's Department over there, because where they're at, they cannot get cell tower.
Sure.
Because of the mountain area.
And it seems a couple times, you know, maybe once a month, once every couple months, we have a story of someone who is out in the wilderness, maybe they're hiking, there's an accident, and ham radio comes through again and again to provide emergency service. You know, so it's a very realistic example. Someone falls, they're unconscious, they break a leg, that sort of thing. They have to, what they can do is even just with a small handheld radio, if they can reach out and get to a repeater in a nearby town, there's been cases of, you know, people hearing that distress, essentially, and they can get medical help needed, you know, whether it's by helicopter or that sort of thing to the location. And that's just something that's not possible with cell phones in so many areas. The other thing is, a couple times a year, we do have a ship at sea that has a distress call, and via amateur radio, they can alert the Coast Guard and get them the help they need. I mean, this happens more often than people realize.
Yes, especially the big cruise lines, when they have someone that goes overboard, they use ham radio usually because they don't have cell phone at that time unless it's a sat phone. Mm-hmm. And they use ham radio to communicate with other ships in the area to bring them over there to help look or whatever.
And a sat phone wouldn't work very well on a day like today with all this fog and haze and clouds and stuff. So, people don't realize that even those sometimes, those commercial satellite phones can't always punch through. They're a little spotty. So, yeah, it's just a reminder that, ham radio is really the backbone of so much emergency service. And there are nets that are running all the time. You know, of service nets, and when we say nets, that's basically someone on a frequency. It could be a local, kind of like a handheld frequency like VHF or UHF, or it could be more the HF frequency. That's like high frequency. You think a shortwave radio. That's what we're talking about. And so that is, you know, people are, they have a whole schedule of operators who will, you know, ask for any calls. People will check in. And we've even had just within the month with the kind of late season hurricanes, Hurricane WatchNet passing all sorts of emergency traffic for, you know, health and welfare traffic, medical traffic, all that sort of thing. So people don't realize it just goes on in the background, but this is going on 24 hours a day.
Yes, and it's something that if we did not have it, or other places didn't have ham radio, that there might be lots of lives that are lost because of it. During Katrina, my brother and I, we sent and received messages through ham radio for the Coast Guard, and we relayed messages to them to places to go to check and get people off roofs and stuff.
Sure. And, you know, the other thing is people think, oh, well, you know, it's just talking into a radio sort of thing. That's all you can do. Well, it is. Ham radio is very much on the cutting edge of technology. For instance, and I think this is pretty amazing, the radios I have are all from the 80s. They're by some considered antiques at this point. But I will tell you this. I can actually send an email through that radio.
Yes.
Through something called Winlink. I've had times where I was out RVing in the middle of the mountains in New Mexico. Zero cell coverage, zero. I mean, we're talking, and it's the 4th of July, too. There is absolutely no chance of getting a cell signal. But I could still send an email. I just put my antenna up, hook my computer into the radio, compose an email. It's like Outlook. You compose it. I can find a station that I can connect to, and basically makes it like a modem. It's like, you know, they remember the old dial-up sort of modem thing. It basically does that, and then it sends the email to a station that's located somewhere with an internet connection. And then once that email gets into that system, it's in the internet, and it can go to any inbox in the world. So, and likewise, and then the amazing thing is, whoever gets that email, be they, if they're a ham or a non-ham, they can still reply to that email, and I'll get it. So, you know, I'll check, I can maybe a couple hours later, I could check back in with that, it's called a node or a different station. It doesn't matter which station I connect to. It'll check the inbox on the server to make see if there's a message. And if there is, it'll send it to me. And so it's just amazing that the kind of things that we can do, as far as technology goes, I mean, this is cutting edge stuff.
Yes. And with that, this all started with, Morse code.
Yeah.
And, everybody, you know, thinks back at the old times when that was what was used to communicate all around the United States and the world. And we still have Morse code in ham radio, and it is used every day.
It is used every day, and in fact, there's a real renaissance going on right now. People really interested in learning the code with the Long Island CW Club and CW Ops. People are taking... There's hundreds of people taking classes every day on Zoom where they're actually teaching Morse code via Zoom, which is really interesting. And it's a great way to help people learn. Because the other thing is, there are, it's called CW. We call it continuous wave. But Morse code, there are traffic nets that happen every single day of the year. And those actually pass traffic. They basically, you know, most of the time just pass announcements or renewal reminders or birthdays, that sort of thing. But they run just so that we keep sharp, and that if we ever did have a real disaster and we needed to pass traffic, it would go to the section net, it would go to a region net, a national net, and then back. So the thought being that you could send a message out in the early evening, and by the late evening, you could actually have a reply back. So the Kansas traffic net, we have one here in the state. They run every night.
Yes, and... with those, with a computer with those, you can do CW all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of fascinating. I've never gotten into that part of it, but I have seen some of it. I've watched a couple of guys that I know that was doing it, and it is really fascinating. It's just, I'm not real sharp on CW, so, I mean, it... But it'll also, the computer will translate the CW for you also.
Oh, yeah. No, it's pretty amazing. And the other crazy thing that I was actually doing last night is I was putting out my call, and what I was able to do it with automated Morse code, I just wanted to see where I was being heard. And if it's called the reverse beacon network. But last night, here from Coffeyville, running about 25 or so watts, I put out my call. It was test, KD0ICP, KD0ICP, that's my call sign. I was heard all the way down in Central America. So wow. I just pulled it up here. So someone in, there was actually a monitoring station there who heard it in, looks like Costa Rica. Wow. So just northwest of San Jose, Costa Rica, just from Coffeyville. So that's just mind-blowing. And then, of course, my signal was also heard in the West Coast, East Coast, and also in Texas. So, this is the kind of technology that we have now. I mean, the hobby is really, really grown technologically. So, you know, we're talking here with John Vest of the Coffeyville Amateur Radio Club, and if anything that we've talked to so far has sounded of interest, there's a pretty simple way that you can become a ham radio operator and are also a member of the club. So, John, you want to talk a little bit about the process of becoming a ham?
To become a ham, you just have to take a test to get your... There's more than one license, but to get the first license, it's a just a test, and it is not a real hard test. It just familiarizes you with the generalization of radios, frequencies, what you can do, what you can't do on it. You can go online to AARL and .org, and you can look up the testing there. We will be giving tests before long. Our club will be. After last month, we had a couple people call and they want to take their tests, and we're going to get it set up so that we can give some testing, hopefully within the next month, and get more people into ham radio and maybe be able to bring back a little bit more of the ham radio that we used to have here in our town, because at one time we had probably 100 to 150 people that were licensed in Coffeyville. And now we're just kind of dwindled a little bit, but we do have a lot more interest in it now. So hopefully we can get a lot more people going now and getting tests. We just have to come up with our meeting place.
Yeah, so and stay tuned here to KGGF because we have the meeting coming up next Tuesday, right?
Yes.
And 7 o'clock, we'll all announce the meeting location, and we'll make sure we publicize that so people know where they can come. And really looking forward to getting some people. And the other thing is, if you're at all curious about getting your license or just want to know what it takes, you know, the thing about ham radio is we love teaching others, and we call it Elmering. It's kind of we have all our code word and slang and everything, but we love to be able to bring new people into the hobby because it's fun to share something that you enjoy. And that's the other thing, is the wonderful thing about ham radio is there's something in it for everyone. I mean, if you just want to pick up a mic and talk to people, you can do that. If you just want to talk to people over the keyboard, you can do that. If you just want to experiment with building your own antennas or your transmitters or your receivers, you can do that. So there's no one sitting out here telling you how to enjoy the hobby. It's all on you and what you want to do. So we're just here to kind of help you find what part of the hobby is interesting to you and help you get the ticket, is what we call it, your license. And there's, of course, the three different levels, but with just the introductory technician level, there's so much you can do.
And with getting your license, once you get your license, we'll also be more than happy to help you get radios. Most of us can probably come up with an extra radio that you can use.
Most hams have a few extra pounds of equipment yeah. that they're carrying around. So we like to be generous in that. It's a hobby that truly does encourage passing things forward. So, John, I really appreciate you coming on to chat, and I look forward. I kind of got you on a weekly stint here, if you're all right with that.
That's
so
fine with me.
Sorry, a monthly yeah. time here in the studio. So I really, really do appreciate you taking the time to come here. So next Tuesday at 7, keep it here on the Mighty 690 for the actual meeting location. We will finalize that and let you know. So if you have any sort of an interest here in ham radio, we want to help you out. So if they have questions, John, how do they get a hold of you?
They just call me at 620-515-0097. And if they want to email me, my email is kc0wab@yahoo.com. And I'll answer your emails, I'll answer your phone calls, anything.
All right. Well, John, I appreciate it, and you have a great rest of your day.
You too. You have a good
one. All right. We'll be right back.